Well, good morning, everyone. Hope you're enjoying this beautiful day. Well, this morning we're talking about Judges chapter 19. And let me give you just a brief overview of what we'll cover before I jump into it. First, we'll talk about the background. And then we're going to talk about the journey home. And then a stranger's welcome is point number three. Point number four, a depraved night of rape and murder. And then finally, point five, the next morning. And then I have point six, so what points for you. So that's just an overview of where we're going today. And this is a challenging chapter. I was doing some research, and some ministers just skip it. Yes, they just avoid it. And think that's the best way to go. Well, let's dive in, though. First of all, the background. We'll talk about verses 1 through 4. Again, we're looking at Judges chapter 19. And I want to say there's only a couple more chapters in Judges, so we're getting near the end here. Verse 1 says, "In those days Israel had no king." And that's such an important verse in this whole chapter. So underline that or highlight it. In those days, Israel had no king. And it's a political fact. There was no king. This is the time of Judges. But then it's also a spiritual fact that the people had no king in their lives that was directing their lives. Oh, there's a few. The Lord always has a remnant of people who are faithful to him, even in the darkest times. And the man Paula was talking about who provided hospitality, perhaps he's that man for us. But just keep that in mind. This is a lawless time. It's a time of just little to no leadership. Very little people are taking the scriptures seriously and trying to live their lives in a way that would matter. They're just sort of doing their own thing. Okay, let's dive into the next section. And I'll read this little section. Let's see, it's about verses 1 through 4 for you. "Now a Levite who lived in a remote area in the hill country of Ephraim took a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah. But she was unfaithful to him." And that's verse 2. And this is the NIV. And I'm going to talk about other versions of verse 2. And Paula got us thinking about that too. So thank you, Paula. Verse 2 continues. "She left him and went back to her parents' home in Bethlehem, Judah. And after she had been there for 4 months, her husband," and I'm sort of putting that in quotation marks, because what kind of a husband do you have to a concubine? And we'll talk about that relationship, because I'm not sure, and I need your help with that. "So her husband went to her to persuade her to return. He had with him a servant and two donkeys. She took him into her parents' home, and when her father saw him, he gladly welcomed him." And verse 4 says, his father-in-law. Again, does that apply when you have a concubine? I'm not sure. And I have to apologize here, and maybe again later, just my lack of scholarship here and lack of Bible training is some of these words, you know, I'm just I don't know what to do with them. But the Lord directs us, and we'll rely on his direction this morning. So verse 4, "His father-in-law, the woman's father, prevailed on him to stay. So he remained with him 3 days, eating and drinking and sleeping there." Okay, let's talk about verse 2 for a moment again. The NIV said, talking about the concubine, "but she was unfaithful to him." King James says, "and his concubine played the whore against him." The New Living Translation says, "but she became angry with him." That's quite a difference, isn't it? Unfaithful, angry. And then American Standard says, "but his concubine found him repugnant." So I don't know exactly what to do with this, everyone. Like I said, I'm not a Bible scholar. I don't even know what word they're exactly talking about here. But just so you know, the people writing translations since King James are having a hard time with this, with verse 2. And it's important, and it has a bearing on the story, I think. So I just throw that out to you. And I sort of have a take on this. And I support more of the, like the New Living Translation that says she became angry with him or she found him repugnant. So that is sort of my take. But as you can see, there are certainly different possible interpretations here. Well, I have some questions for you here that I wrestled with. And one of them is, why does he have a concubine and not a wife? And does he actually have like a main wife? We're not told in this chapter. We're just told he has a concubine. Now he is a Levite, which is a leader in the Israeli community. We could probably assume he has a main wife, but she's not talked about. Other concubines we can think of in Scripture, you know, remember when Abraham and Sarah were trying to have a child and they couldn't. So Sarah said, use my handmaiden, Hagar. And so he did. And so that's sort of a concubine relationship. And if you remember, Hagar just had a horrible situation. You know, she eventually had to leave. And so a concubine, I could just say, it's not a good standing for a person. Other possible concubines would be like, remember Jacob had his two wives, the daughters of Laban. I know there were Rachel, and what was the other one's name? I was laying
Leah,
yes, thank you. I was laying in bed last night thinking, what was her name? But then, remember, each of these wives had a handmaiden who they gave to Jacob, Bilhah and Zilpah. So perhaps these women are sort of in the concubine relationship too. It's a second class, quasi-marriage relationship. Another question I have is, what does it feel like to be a concubine? Do they feel loved? Do they feel respected? Does the man listen to the concubine? Do they have any rights? I don't know, but based on these other examples, I think they have little respect, little love. And the main thing I think about the concubine is they're sort of taken advantage of. The society seems to allow men to take advantage of women in this way, and it's not good. Well, let's talk about the Levite for a moment. He is the main character in this story, and I want to just summarize some benefits of being a Levite. And these can be found in, I want to say, Deuteronomy 18. And so just a couple points. This man has benefits in this society. In Deuteronomy 18, starting verse 1, it says, the Levitical priests, indeed the whole tribe of Levi, are to have no allotment or inheritance with Israel. They shall live on the food offerings presented to the Lord. This is the share due to the priests from the people who sacrifice a bull or a sheep, the shoulder, the internal organs, and the meat from the head. Okay, so when a sacrifice is made, the Levites get a certain share. It's right there in Deuteronomy. You are to give them the first fruits of your grain, new wine and olive oil, the first wool from the shearing of your sheep. This is all stuff that the Levites get. Remember, they didn't get territory like Judah or Benjamin and so forth. So they get this stuff. Verse 5 says, for the Lord your God has chosen them and their descendants out of all your tribes to stand and minister in the Lord's name always. Okay, here's another benefit that the Levites get. If a Levite moves from one of your towns anywhere in Israel where he's living and comes to the place the Lord will choose, he may minister in the name of the Lord at that place. He is to share equally in the benefits of all the Levites, even though he may have received money from the sale of family possessions. So there's specific benefits that Levites get, even when they move to a new community. They are owed certain things by the society. And I'm going to suggest to you that this Levite sort of feels like he's a privileged person. He feels like he has benefits, and he's going to get all these benefits because they're due him. And I'm afraid that this has impacted his character in bad ways. And I feel like the woman in this case, the concubine, has been exploited. She's in a position that allows her to be exploited by this Levite. And I want to read you just the definition of exploit. It is to use someone unfairly for your own advantage. And some synonyms for exploit: cheated, used, manipulated, abused, fleeced, enslaved, bullied, extorted, intimidated, preyed on, walked all over. So this Levite is looking at this concubine as his servant. He is exploiting her. She is not in a good position. Okay, well, that's the background a little bit. That was our first point. Let's look at the second point, point two, which is the journey home. Okay, so the Levite went to the home of his concubine's father. He stays there for 4 days. Her father is sort of wining and dining him. He doesn't want him to leave. I'm not sure what the father's motivation is in all this. Is he, I just don't know. I don't know what his motivation is. But he treats the Levite nice, and the Levite is taking advantage of that. And maybe that has something to do with it. The father knows that he's this important man, and he's, you know, wining and dining him, and the Levite is just sort of soaking it in. You know, yes, yes, you're right. Yep, I deserve all this and more. So he stays 4 days, and they go through this little ritual of the man acting like he's going to leave, but then the father is like, no, no, stay, don't go. And let's pick it up and look at verse 9 and 10 here. And this is now the fifth day. The Levite has stayed there 4 days, and now on the fifth day, pick it up in verse 9. Then when the man with his concubine and his servant got up to leave, his father-in-law said, now look, it's almost evening. Spend the night here. The day is nearly over. Stay and enjoy yourself. Early tomorrow you can get up and be on your way home. But unwilling to stay another night, the man left and went toward Jebus, that is Jerusalem, with his donkeys and his concubine. So some questions for you I have about these verses. Why does the Levite stay so long? Why does he then, on the fifth day, leave so late in the day? You know, he has to know that this is going to put him on the road overnight if he leaves in the afternoon. He knows about the travel times. And then another question, what does all this say about him? Does it say he likes leisure and his own pleasure? I think it sort of does. And then maybe it also says he's not very good at, like, planning. Or, you know, to leave in the late afternoon on a, you know, it's going to put him overnight in one of these towns. So I don't think he's really on the ball here. Okay, let's pick it up in verse 11. When they were near Jebus and the day was almost gone, the servant said, come, let's stop in the city of the Jebusites and spend the night. But his master said, no. We won't go into any city whose people are not Israelites. We will go to Gibeah. And some questions I have about these verses. Did the man know Gibeah's reputation? Because when they stay there, the male residents of that community are going to beat on his door and want to have sex with him. You'd think that kind of behavior kind of is known in the communities in the region, that this is what could happen in this town. So does he know this town's reputation? I don't know. We're not really told. And I don't know what the implications of that would be. And then another question, is there really any difference between these two cities? I mean, the city of the Jebusites and Gibeah, the Israeli city, what's really the difference? I don't think there's any at this time. I think the Israeli city is so like the Canaanite cities that there's really no difference. So again, why does this man, the Levite, think there's a difference? Is he just deluded? Is he engaging in wishful thinking? In any event, this is going to turn out to be a whole tragic experience for him. Okay, the next point is point three, and I've entitled this A Stranger's Welcome. And this is verses 15 through 21. And I'll read those to you. There they stopped to spend the night, and they went and sat in the city square, but no one took them in for the night. That evening, an old man from the hill country who was living in Gibeah came in from his work in the fields. You are welcome at my house, the old man said. Let me supply whatever you need. Only don't spend the night in the square. So this guy knows the reputation of Gibeah. So he took him into his house and fed his donkeys. After they had washed their feet, they had something to eat and drink. And so, as Paula shared with us, there's at least one godly man in this city who practices hospitality, and that's a good example for us. Okay, moving on to the next point, verses 22 through 24. While they were enjoying themselves, some of the wicked men of the city surrounded the house. Pounding on the door, they shouted to the old man, "Bring out the man who came to your house so we can have sex with him." The owner of the house went outside and said to them, "No, my friends, don't be so vile. Since this man is my guest, don't do this outrageous thing. Look, here's my virgin daughter and his concubine. I will bring them out to you now, and you can use them and do whatever you wish. But as for this man, don't do such an outrageous thing." Well, this is just a horrible passage in so many ways, but we need to deal with it. And this whole idea of the man offering his virgin daughter and the concubine, that's outrageous to us. But the notion of hospitality at this time was very important. And I don't think you could say it's more important than offering to send his daughter out. But that seems to be the culture. I don't understand it, but that's what we have. It does show, though, that women are not valued. It's just disappointing, tragic. This story is very similar to Genesis 19, where, remember, the three visitors who were angels come to stay with Lot in Sodom and Gomorrah is about to be destroyed. And Lot has the same experience, basically. He brings these men in, and the wicked men of the town beat on his door and say, "Send these men out, we want to have sex with them." And he offers to send out his two virgin daughters, but they don't want that. Fortunately, this is all averted because the angels blind these men and then continue with their plan to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. But that's also an example for us with this situation in Judges, because this town of Gibeah, this supposed Israeli town that follows God's precepts, has become as bad as the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. Same behavior here. Humanity at its depths. And here we have that again. I was sharing this passage with my family members the other night when we were having dinner, and they gave me some good insights, because I'm like, you know, what do I do with this? And they had some good insights. And one of the insights we had was, and I'm very thankful for this, in the United States of America, I think our country has God's blessing in a significant way. There are so many groups of people like us meeting this morning around this country, people who honor God, people who pray, people who follow his commandments and his precepts. And I think his blessing is over this country, and we just see it in so many ways, and we have so many things to take advantage of. And what we have in America, for the most part, is so much better than this town of Gibeah at that time. They just do not have God's blessings, but here we do, and I'm just thankful for that, and I just wanted to point that out. Okay, let's pick it up in verse 25. But the men would not listen to him. So the man, the Levite, took his concubine, sent her outside to them. They raped her and abused her throughout the night, and at dawn they let her go. At daybreak, the women went back to the house where her master was staying, fell down at the door, and lay there until daylight. She will die as well. There's strong implications that she dies during this night. And just a couple points about this. The Levite, this man who I say is not honorable, who seems to like position and leisure, he's quite willing to just send this concubine out there to have this crowd, you know, rape her and kill her. And I think that says so much about his character as well. And this man, a Levite, supposed to be the priest at God's temple, is, you know, this is how he behaves. And it's just a horrible example. And I was thinking, what other options did the Levite have? other than just saying, you out there now. You know, he could have fought. He went out there and fought. Maybe him and the old man could fight them off, you know. He has a servant too. A second thing he could have done is pray to the Lord, you know, Lord, give me direction. What am I going to do in this difficult situation? A third thing they could have done is to try and escape. You know, let's go out the back. You know, we'll sneak out. We'll go to a friend's house. He doesn't seem to entertain any of these ideas. It's just quickly, let me take this woman who I've exploited and send her out there to the crowd. And on some level, what the crowd wants to do with her is what this man had been doing with her too. So there's that connection as well. And that shows you why he values her so little. He could have tried to pay them off. He doesn't do that. And then finally, he could have tried to shame them. He could have went out there and said, I am a Levite. I'm a minister in God's temple, and I follow his commandments, and what you're doing here is wrong. And, you know, he could have shamed them. He has that position, but he did nothing like that. He just quickly sent her out there to be attacked and killed. And some questions I have about this is, what was the man doing while the crowd had his concubine out there through the night? Was he sleeping? Was he nervous? You know, what was he doing? Did he not care that she would likely be killed? I don't think he did. Did he sleep? What was the old man doing? It's just some questions. Okay, the fifth point is the next morning. And when her master got up in the morning, opened the door, he stepped out to continue on his way. There lay his concubine, who is dead. He said to her, get up, let's go. But there's no answer. And then he put her on his donkey and set out for home. And this again shows how out of touch he is. He's just like, come on, you are a possession of mine. Get up, let's go. And he has no care for her, no concern for her, no respect for her. When he reached home, he took a knife, cut up his concubine into 12 parts, and sent them into all the areas of Israel. Everyone who saw it was saying to one another, such a thing has never been seen or done, not since the day the Israelites came up out of Egypt. Just imagine, we must do something, so speak up. And my thought with this is, now he's outraged. You know, the way he treated this woman, the decisions he made, but now he's outraged because they exploited and killed something that belonged to him, this poor woman, and now he's outraged. Well, I put a lot of blame for this event on this man, the Levite, and I think we can put some. But keep this in the back of your mind, is the Lord is still going to use this horrible situation. He's going to use it in the next couple chapters where Israel will be incensed about this. And perhaps the Lord was using it in a way just to get people's attention because nothing else seemed to be working. I'm not sure. But just know that that's where we're going. And TJ has this next chapter. So pray for him as he looks at that. Okay. Well, oh, and some final questions I had. What was the Levite's motivation in doing this? Is he heartbroken about his concubine? I don't think so. Has his pride been hurt? I think that's more of the case here. And then our final points here are just our section of so what. What lessons do I think we can take away from this? The first one is love your neighbor as yourself. This actually comes out first in the Old Testament in Leviticus 19. So the Levi would have known this verse, love your neighbor as yourself. But then also in the Gospels in Mark 12, one of the teachers of the law came and asked Jesus, of all the commandments, which is the most important? And Jesus said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. And how would the story be different if the Levite had this as an important part of his character, an important part of his life? A second so what? Follow the scriptures. Leviticus 25, this important verse that Moses heard from the Lord on Mount Sinai, Leviticus 25:18, the Lord said, follow my decrees and be careful to obey my laws, and you will live safely in the land. Then the land will yield its fruit, and you will eat your fill and live there in safety." The Levite did not follow this. Many of his neighbors did not follow this. But the Lord, you know, the Lord's not asking for much here. Follow my decrees and be careful to obey my laws. But the people and judges at this time had discarded this. They just decided it wasn't for them. And we see the repercussions here. And then another verse about following the scriptures in Deuteronomy 28, some of Moses' last words to the people. Verse 9, "The Lord will establish you as a people holy to himself. And he has sworn to you, if you keep the commandments of the Lord, your God, and walk in his ways, and all the peoples of the earth shall see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you." But these people and judges were not keeping the commandments of the Lord. They were not walking in his ways. A third lesson for us is to be holy. Be an example. Be a child of the covenants. There are something like 5 or 6 major covenants in the Bible. You know, it starts with Noah, and God says, "I will no longer destroy the earth." And then it moves to Abraham with the Abrahamic covenant. And then there's a Davidic covenant. And then it moves up into the New Testament with Jesus sort of being the answer to all those promised covenants. All these promises, be holy. We are children of the covenants. And a verse for you about this is Exodus 19, verse 4. And God is saying to Moses and the people, "You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." The Lord doesn't ask a lot of us, but he asks us to, you know, obey his voice, keep his covenants, follow his laws, and then we just get blessing beyond our imagination. It just doesn't seem that difficult, but in Judges, they were having a hard time of it. A fourth point under the so what category, defend the weak. Defend the weak. We are called to do that. If you see someone who's weak, we're called to take care of orphans and widows, people who have no strength. And the Levite here totally messed this up and forgot this. But Psalm 82, verses 3 through 4 says, "Defend the weak and the fatherless. Uphold the cause of the poor and the oppressed. Rescue the weak and the needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked." And Proverbs 31, 8 through 9 also talks about this. "Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy." And then another so what point is to, number 5, be a leader. We need leadership. We need people who take stands, who say the right thing, who do the right thing. And in Matthew chapter 20, Jesus is talking about this, and he says, "But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be your slave, even as the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." So for us as leaders, we become the servants. And that gets the attention of so many people because it's a radical idea. And the people on Wall Street aren't doing it. People in Washington, D.C. aren't doing it. But we can do it. And then our final point under so what is number 6. Don't forget the great things God has done in your life. Don't forget the great things God has done in your life. The people in Israel at the time of the judges, they forgot. You know, it's not that far away from you know, dividing the Red Sea and the plagues and the manna. They just forgot. But don't forget the things God has done in your life. We know how He changes people's lives. He provides in miraculous ways. He heals broken relationships. He provides forgiveness. He provides resources and blessing and just heals us in ways we could have never imagined. And just don't forget that. And as we wrap up here, I just want to leave you with this verse from Ephesians 2. He is our peace. He is our peace. But we have to do our part as well. Let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this reminder, these reminders from the book of Judges. Help us to understand this chapter even more as we think about it and meditate on it. And then give TJ wisdom next week as he prepares for the next chapter. Give us strength. Help us rely on your Spirit. Help us to follow you. Help us stay in your word so we can keep your precepts and laws before us all the days of our life. We thank you for this time. Amen.